Nice to meet everybody. That way everybody can know each other's names when we jump in. So we started with the question of, like, where does the fast day come from? We have a fast day tomorrow. It has something to do with Purim, but do we have any explicit evidence that there's a fast day as part of the Purim celebration in the Megillah? So Stanley had made the point that maybe it's based on the fact that there was a fast which took place when Esther went to confront Ahasuerus. And Stanley was saying, well, it's true that that happened, but one question that he raised was, it's difficult because that fast probably took place in the month of Nisan, which we're going to demonstrate through looking at the Psukim. So if we try and fast every year on the 13th day of the month of Adar, because Purim is on the 14th, this year we have a complication because of Shabbos, but we'll just keep it simple, that we fast on the 13th day of the month of Adar, then we don't have any precedent for a fast on the 13th day of the month of Adar. So that's a difficulty that Stanley was raising if we argue that the fast was based on the fast that took place literally in that generation at that moment when Esther had to approach Ahasuerus. So what would be another possible precedent for the fast that we do tomorrow or in regular years on the 13th day of the month of Adar? Where would that come from?
I just recently heard that it had something to do with Pesach, the fast.
Yeah, exactly. So what's really interesting is Stanley was making that point also, and we'll show it in the Psukim, is that it appears just by, we would say, by lottery. The way that it fell out is that the fast that the Jewish people engaged in during the time of Esther and Ahasuerus and Haman actually fell out over Pesach. And then there was a whole question. In fact, the Medrash has a discussion. When Esther instructs Mordechai to organize a fast, Mordechai says, what do you think he says? It's Pesach. And Esther basically says, dude, everybody's going to be killed. Pesach, no Pesach, you got to fast. So the way it works out is that it probably was over Pesach. That's the assumption of the Gemara, it's the assumption of the Medrash Rava. So that's what Stanley was saying. The only problem that we have is that if the original fast was over Pesach, so why are we fasting on the 13th day of Adar, if that's what we're trying to replicate? It's a good thing that we have these shiurim. Because first we confuse you and then we clarify. Yeah, Gladys.
I just thought of a different connection that has to do with your question. I mean,
you had to answer the question.
The fast of the firstborn anyway, right? So that could possibly.
Right. But Gladys, I'm going to complicate your life a little bit. And that's because we're not really allowed to fast in the month of Nisan. Yeah, of course. Hey, Nathan. Let me just make sure everybody knows each other. Gladys, Stanley, you heard this, Shira, Sarah, Nathan. And what we're discussing is why we have a fast day on the 13th of the month of Adar. This year it's early because of Shabbos. But we don't really have a clear precedent for this fast. So what Stanley had suggested was that maybe it's based on the fast that took place in the time of the Megillah. It says that Esther instructed Mordechai to tell the Jewish people to fast for 3 days. The only problem is that was a fast that took place in the month of Nisan. So that doesn't necessarily give us a precedent for a fast on the 13th day of the month of Adar. And Gladys was saying that it's funny because, we have a fast day anyway, the fast day of the firstborns, which is different. It's strange that we allow the firstborns to fast anyway because, according to the Mishnah, it's prohibited to fast during the entire month of Nisan, which is interesting.
You're saying the fast of the firstborn for Pesach.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point that Gladys raised. It's just interesting that we have a fast then anyway. So what are the other, What do we know happened on the 13th day of the month of Adar?
Killing.
No, who was killing who?
They might have fasted prior to going to war, in essence.
But does it say that they fasted in the Megillah? But Stanley has a somewhat speculative suggestion, which is that we know that there was a war. The Jewish people went to war against their enemies on the 13th day of the month of Adar.
Was that the day that they were supposed to kill us?
Yes.
And we went out to kill them?
Exactly. There was a complication. If you read the 8th and the 9th chapter of the Megillah, what happened was that Ahasuerus was tentative about recanting his decree because it had been sealed with the royal seal. So they found a loophole. And what he said was, okay, I can't exactly revoke my decree entirely, but you can defend yourselves. And so the Jews went to war on the 13th day of the month of Adar. Then what happened subsequently, the Jews had a major victory, the hand of God. Subsequently what happened was that the Jews of Shushan requested an extra day to go to war on the 14th of the month of Adar, and thus they celebrated on the 15th. Some of you may have heard of Shushan Purim. Shushan Purim means the day when they rested. That way Purim sort of became a two-day holiday. The Jews and the rest of the kingdom rested on the 14th day. The Jews of Shushan continued to fight for another day. Esther asked Ahasuerus for special permission, and he allowed them to wipe out the enemies that remained over the course of the second day. So what Stanley is suggesting is that, yes, that was a day of war, and maybe we're fasting on that day. So then the question becomes, it's strange. If you think about all of our other fast days, the cycle of the four fasts that we have, Tisha B'Av for the destruction of the temples, the 17th day of Tammuz when the city walls were breached, the 10th of Teves when the city was surrounded, and Tzom Gedalia when the Jewish leader, Gedalia, who was appointed in the wake of the destruction of the temple, was killed. Those are all mournful, sad days, right?
So maybe the correlation is that on a day that Hashem decrees for destruction to take place, we're supposed to fast.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike the other 3 days, if anything good happens, we're supposed to celebrate the next day.
Okay, very interesting. So what Nathan is saying is really, I think, an innovative idea, namely that in a way, Tanis Esther sort of does fit in with the general paradigm. In the general paradigm of fast days is that something tragic, mournful, sad happened, and we remember that by fasting. Those are the four fasts that we just recounted, which all have to do with the cycle of the temple. Tanis Esther is completely unique amongst our fasts, right? Because, right, thank God, tragedy was averted. But Nathan is saying that no, but the fact that there was eventually, you know, a terrible thing decreed originally to happen on that day is enough to necessitate a fast in its own right. Actually, that idea was developed at great length by Rabbi Soloveitchik. So he also felt that Tanis Esther, even though we were saved, sort of carried with it the permanent stain of what was eventually supposed to happen on that day. And that's really part of the whole story of Purim, that being in Gullus means being in constant uncertainty. And even if, you know, one crisis was averted, there's an ongoing sense of crisis. Just to make one kind of reference to that, it's always fascinating to me that what's the last piece of information in the Megillah, really? Not the salvation of the Jewish people, but it says that Ahasuerus levied a tax. It says, Vayasem ha-melech Ahasuerus mas al ha'aretz v'iyei hayam. So Ahasuerus levied a tax on the empire and on all the isles of the city. So there are two possible explanations for this. Either we're in desperate need of information about tax policy in the islands of the Persian Empire, or the Megillah is trying to make a point, which is that...
out of the frying pan and into the fire.
Exactly. That we're,
can we follow Stanley's point a little more, though? If the fast was decreed 11 months earlier...
No.
The original 3 days of fasting.
Okay, yes. That was in Nisan.
11 months earlier?
Yes.
So, maybe the rabbis decided afterwards that, yes, we could have a fast a month after Purim, but that wouldn't be as logical as having a fast the day before and to connect. So, we're sensitive to the history of having fasted, but we should logically put it where people will learn the lesson.
Good. And I think that's exactly what did happen.
What you were saying.
I think Stanley was talking about the war, but we're going to see how we're going. I actually think that's very true. Is that we ended up condensing things. Now, what I want to just begin with, and I think we've established a number of really important ideas that we're going to try to follow through with. The first thing I want to address is this very important difference. Tanis Esther is, we said, distinct from the other four fasts that we have, leaving Yom Kippur aside. That's a fast in the Torah, and that seems to be something of its own right. It says, V'initem et nafshotechem, that one day of year, generally we're not supposed to have to suffer. God doesn't want us to suffer. There are only two mitzvahs in the Torah where God says you need to suffer. One of them is Bris Milah, and you get wine for it afterwards, so it's a fair deal. And then the other one is Yom Kippur, V'initem et nafshotechem, one day a year. But generally speaking, there's not a concept of Judaism doesn't require one to suffer as a value. God wants us to basically be in good shape. So Yom Kippur is a theme in its own right. But the all the other fast days we have, it's because something terrible and tragic happened, and we mourn through the process of fasting. Tanis Esther, right, it was about tragedy and crisis averted, but it was really a fast of uncertainty. The sword was hanging over us, and we fast as a way of remembering and memorializing that tragic uncertainty, which is quite different. That's the first point that I wanted to make, and we're going to return to that, because that's a very important, it's a new paradigm of fasting. It's not fasting as mourning, but really fasting in light of uncertainty. And we'll come back to that.
Could
yeah.
there be mourning for the dead Persians in the same way that we don't do Hallow on the seventh day of Pesach because Hashem's creation is killed?
So just to bring everybody on the same page, what Nathan is suggesting is the Gemara asks the question of why we don't have full Hallel on Pesach. And the Gemara answers for a couple of reasons, but the most famous one is Hashem says, Ma'asa yadai tovin bayam, ve'atem omrim shira, my creations are drowning the sea, and you will sing unto me. So, in other words, that there was a terrible tragedy of the loss of human life, even if it was the enemies of the Jewish people, the oppressors of the Jewish people. Do you need a chair? Okay, grab a chair and come nigh. Come hither. So, what Nathan is suggesting is, maybe the fast is for the dead Persians, right? That you know, and the other enemies of the Jewish people. It seems to me that there's a distinction between not saying Hallel on the one hand and declaring the fast day. That one is a qualitative leap over the other. But it's interesting. I haven't seen that in any of the Rishonim, but that would be sort of an interesting idea. So what we have so far is that there's a distinction between a fast of mourning and a fast of uncertainty. And Tanis Esther is a fast of uncertainty. And this point really emerges explicitly, I found it in the most interesting way, in the comments of the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim. But before that, I just want to build up to that in this, I think, an interesting way, which is by asking if there was, when Purim was originally established, the ninth chapter of the Megillah is about the establishment of the holiday of Purim, do we find the establishment of the fast day, or was that a later development?
It's mentioned there.
Ah, Stanley, very. So Stanley's...
I just read it this way.
Stanley, that's fine. Now this is always the problem with source sheets, is, it allows for cheating. But this is what I call a trick source sheet, because reading ahead here can only get you into trouble, as we'll see. So it does mention... What's that?
I was reading the Megillah.
No, I know, and that's usually a great idea. We're very pro reading the Megillah here at the Jewish Center. The only thing is that it's very confusing. So watch what happens. The ninth chapter of the Megillah is, by the end, everybody's going crazy, because usually people are fasting, and it's long, but it's really interesting, because if you read it carefully, you notice all the things that were taking place in that generation. So I'm just going to read a number of psukim here, and hopefully raise some questions. So in source one we have, Vayichtov Mordechai Hadvarim Ha'ela. Mordechai wrote all the things that happened, so presumably the Megillah. Mordechai wrote the Megillah. Vayishlach Sfarim El Kol HaYehudim. And Mordechai sent scrolls to all the Jewish people, Asher Bechol Medinot HaMelech Ahashverosh, that were in all 127 countries, HaKerovim, those who were close, VaRechokim, and those who were far away. And what was Mordechai asking from them? What was the point of sending these scrolls? L'chayim aleihem, so that they would accept upon themselves liyotosim et yom arba'asar l'chodesh adar, the 14th day of the month of Adar, that's the day of Purim, v'et yom chamisha asar bo, and the 15th day. Why the 15th? We said before Shushan, because they request an extra day. But what's the year of the request? B'chol shana v'shana, that they should make Purim a holiday in every year. There's a bold request that they should accept this as a holiday. Generally, we don't add holidays. V'kibel ha'yehudim, and the Jewish people actually agreed. It was the first and last time that the Jewish people went along with unanimously. Right, exactly. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that this was the Nasa v'Nishma moment. The Gemara says that the Jewish people, I don't want to get too far afield, but the Gemara in Shabbos on page 85, Daf Pehei, asks the question. It says, it's really not fair. We were coerced into accepting the Torah. God held the mountain over our heads, Kafalem Harkigigis. So what the Gemara's response is true. It was Mikan Moda Rabba Lo Raisa. Here we have a great objection to the Torah. However, says the next line in the Gemara, Amar Rabba Kimu v'kiblu. These psukim that Nathan was just talking about, Kimu aleihem, they validated Masha Kiblu Kvar, what they had already accepted, namely by the Jewish people accepting Purim and validating that God, you know, had saved them in Purim. It was in a sense a validation of the entire Torah. So this, you said it in an offhanded kind of way, but this is actually a Nasa V'Nishma moment, according to the Gemara in Shabbos. Anyway, V'kibel Yehudim Eid Asher Hechelu La'asot, the Jewish people, you know, had now accepted upon them for all generations that which they started to do. V'eit Asher Katav Mordechai Aleihem. They actually listened to Mordechai. Wow. Kimu V'kiblu HaYehudim. The Jewish people accepted and validated Aleihem. Ve'al Zaram, for them and for their descendants, ve'al kol hanilvim aleihem, and anybody who would join up with them, namely anybody who would convert into Judaism, had to then subsequently accept Purim. Ve'lo yavor, and they would not brook any violation of that. Liot osim et shnei hayamim ha'ila, to do these 2 days, kichtavam, as written, v'chizmanam, in their appropriate times, v'chol shana v'shana, in every generation. So this is very stirring passages about how the Jewish people accepted the holiday of Purim, and even Shushan Purim, but do we see anything about a fast? Zero. So Mordechai has not told the Jewish people that they must fast. Now this might be a good old rabbinic trick, right? He was trying to get them to accept a holiday, didn't think it would be too prudent to get them to...
He accepted the drinking holiday.
This was not, as things go, this was not a tough sell. But...
Can I ask about the words?
Yeah, sure.
Hakrovim v'harekokim. If you have 127 countries, some of them are really far away. So are they saying geographically, distance-wise, they're far away? Or the Jews who were close to Hashem and the Jews who had strayed from Hashem because they'd gone to the one-year, was it a one-year party or a one-week party?
Well, first there was a 180-day party. And then...
So
and then there was the 7 day after party.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it possible that...
A beautiful drush. I love it. I like it very much. Strange. Everybody, all the Mephorshim understand it to me geographically, but Nathan is having a beautiful drush. He's saying, Mordechai reached out to everybody that if Purim was going to be accepted as a holiday, it couldn't just be, you know, for the Orthodox, but it, you know, you had to reach out to the entire Jewish people. It's beautiful. I like it very much. HaKrovim v'harechokim. I like it. Yeah, Gladys.
But Esther herself was, like, removed from
to a certain extent, right? I mean, the Gemara says that this was a time of incredible assimilation. We have to remember that that there was a very powerful culture, and the Jewish people. That's what the Gemara says, that the Jewish people had become, in a very short amount of time, completely assimilated into Persian culture. It's a big one of the big themes of the first parak in Megillah. But now watch what happens. So Mordechai did not ask them to fast. Next year Esther comes back. Vatichtov Esther Hamalka bat Avichail. Esther the queen, daughter of Avichail, wrote U Mordechai Hayudi, and Mordechai here in a secondary role, et Kol Tokef, at all of, again wrote all the things that happened. Lekayim, so that the Jewish people should validate et igeret hapurim hazot hashinit, the Purim in the second year. They weren't sure, in other words, that the Jewish people would really accept Purim. So the next year, Esther wrote again, telling the Jewish people to keep on doing this. L'kayim et yimei hapurim ha'ila bizmanihem, that the Jewish people should stick to the original plan and keep Purim. Kasher kiyam aleihem Mordechai ha'yudi v'Esther ha'malkah, as Mordechai had initially instructed them to do. And here we have a crucial line. V'ka'asher kimu al nafsham v'al zaram, and as they had validated for themselves and their descendants, divrei hatzomot v'za'akatam, the fast days, as well as their tefillah. So Stanley makes the point that we seem to have an explicit piece of evidence that there was already a fast day that was decreed in the time of the Megillah. That they had the day of the 14th, the day of the 15th, and there was some fast day which was accepted already in the time of Esther and Mordechai, that they had ratified the fast days as well. And this seems to be the way that the Rambam Maimonides, if you look at source 2, understands this pasuk. V'nahugu kol Yisrael bizmanim elu, the Rambam says in my life, right, the Rambam who lived from 1135 to 1204, So the Rambam saying in the 12th century, Nagu kol Yisrael bizmanum elu, lehit anos, to fast, bishloshasar be'adar, on the 13th day of the month of Adar, zecher, as a remembrance, latanis shehis anu bimei haman, as a remembrance, as a tribute to the Tanis, which was fasted in the times of Haman, Shene'emar, and which pasuk does he quote? Divrei Hatzamot v'za'akatam. So the Rambam understood that this pasuk was a reference to those fast days that the Jewish people observed during the time of Haman. And so he says, this pasuk says that there was already this concept of the fast days that had been accepted in the Jewish people, and one of the things that Esther was communicating was, you should accept the holiday of Purim and the Shushan Purim just as you had accepted the fast days upon yourself. That is the approach of the Rambam. So the Rambam is with Stanley in reading these psukim. Stanley is with the Rambam, however you want it. Divrei Hatzamot v'zakatam. It's fine. So the Rambam at least understands that this pasuk is a reference to fast days that took place in that generation. But the Ran, in source, yeah, Nick.
Before we get there.
Yes, sir.
If one wanted to read it and parse it very closely,
yes,
maybe she's saying, listen, we celebrated it last year, I want to celebrate it again this year. In the same way that we celebrate fast days that are decreed by the rabbis and prayer days that are decreed by the rabbis, and this one's a prayer of thanks day, and by reading the Megillah, it's the same as Hallel, so you don't have to say Hallel. Where do they see that there's a fast for Purim as opposed to the general category of something added to the canon?
Okay, so Nathan is doing a very close reading of this verse, and what he's saying is, look, Esther is making an appeal, and she's saying, just as you accepted previous editions, so too accept Purim. That is, in fact, the simple reading of the pasuk. L'kayem en yimei ha-purim ha'ela, accept Purim, dot, 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 Ka'asher kimu al nafsham ve'al zaram, just as at one point they had accepted for themselves and for all generations, divrei hatzomot, fast days, v'za'akatam, and days of prayer. So what Nathan has really pointed out is that if you read the pasuk carefully, it doesn't seem to be what the Rambam was saying. The Rambam was saying that this is a reference to the fast days of Purim itself. And that the Ran makes exactly the point that Nathan makes. So Baruch Shekivanta, Nathan really, by reading it carefully, understood that it probably is not a reference to what, you know, Stanley's saying. Isn't it explicit in Megillah? But it's really not. What Esther is saying is, don't put me off by saying, look, listen, lady, we can't add days to the calendar. We would like to add your holiday, but we're not going to do it because we don't add anything. She's saying, well, what do you mean you don't add anything? You added fast days, and that's exactly the way the Ran reads it. Uma shekatuv, and what it says in the Megillah, the kasher kiblu al nafsham, they accepted upon themselves divrei hatzomot v'za'akatam. What does that mean? Not as the Rambam had it, to speak about the fast day of Purim itself. Kvar pirshuhu, it's already been explained, al dalad somos shetiknu hanaviyim al achorban, the four fast days that I mentioned previously that all have to do with the destruction of the temple, namely Tisha B'Av. Then previously on the calendar we have Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, when the walls were breached. Then we have Asar B'Teves, when the city was surrounded. And Tzom Gedalia, when the last Jewish, as the Rambam says, Nechbag Achalas Yisrael, the coal of Israel, had been extinguished. V'hakatuv omer, and the Torah is saying, in this case the Megillah, Shekiblu aleihem lasos mishtav v'simcha b'mei hatova. Esther's argument was, you should certainly accept upon yourself to have a holiday on good times, kasher kiblu aleihem bimei hara'ah divrei hatzomot v'zakatam. Just as, you know, to memorialize bad times, you accepted upon yourselves fast days. So the Ran says, I don't believe that this pasuk is telling us that they had already accepted a fast day in the times of Mordechai and Esther. What Mordechai and Esther were simply asking was for them to accept the holiday. There is no mention to a fast day of Purim in the Megillah. That came later. But the Ran says really one important thing. He goes further. He says, that's what I really think. However, there's one word that's still bothering me, and that is the word za'aka. The pasuk said, divrei hatzomot, the matters of the fast days, which the Ran has interpreted to mean previous fast days, which had been ratified and accepted. But what about za'akatam, crying out? The Ran says, that still bothers me. Umihu, big however. Masha Amar Bizaakatam, that last word of the Pasuk, and their cries and their prayers. Mora, that teaches us Shehu Medaber Bitanios Shel Esther. That points back in the direction of the Rambam. That seems to point in the direction of the fast of Esther herself. Shehayu Bizaaka, that were accompanied by prayers. Shedalad Hatzomos, the four fast days aren't for prayer. Those are Le'evelheim, for mourning. Velolat Tvila Bizaaka. But not for crying out and praying. Why is the distinction that we raised before? The difference between a fast of mourning when something tragic happened and a fast of uncertainty when we're praying for salvation. Two completely different paradigms of fasting. By virtue of the fact that the Pasuk says, V'za'akatam, says the Ran, that sounds like a fast day that's defined by za'aka, crying out, tefillah. That would point back in the direction of the Rambam that this is indeed a reference to a fast of Esther. Because what was Esther's fast? It was a fast not of mourning, but a fast of tefillah and uncertainty. Interesting. Ella shemimasha kasev b'masecha sofrim, then he will get to masecha sofrim later, nira she'en tanis u'gimel tanis kabua. He says, but nonetheless, in light of masecha sofrim, it doesn't seem like there was a fixed fast day on the 13th of Adar. So the reason I wanted to bring this up is to A, deal with the pasuk. Do we have an explicit pasuk in the Megillah which indicates that a fast day was accepted already in that time? The Rambam feels the answer is yes. The Ran says the answer is no. But then the Ran hedges a little bit because the word za'akatam makes it sound like the fast days are fast days that are defined by za'aka, and that's a different kind of paradigm of fast. That's the fast day, that type of fast day that Esther engaged in. So I was very excited by this Ran, because what it really did, and I'll take Nathan's question in just a second, is it highlights for me the distinction I wanted to make anyway, which is that there's a major difference between the four fasts, which are fast days of mourning, and the fast of Purim, which is really a fast of uncertainty. We're not mourning something tragic that happened, but what we're really doing is fasting to memorialize that sort of tragic uncertainty that the Jewish people found themselves in at a certain point in history. Yeah, Nathan, and then with another question.
Is the Ran saying that the word is bothering him to the point where there would be a fast? Or is the word bothering him to reinforce the fact that there wasn't a fast because there wasn't any za'aka going on during the festival of Purim? And is it possible to read the Ran in support of his first paragraph?
Well, he's saying he's changing directions here. He's saying, umihu, however, masha amar, Vizakatam, that says, Mora Shehu Medaber Bitanio Shel Esther. This must be talking about the fast days, not the previous four fast days of the Churban, but the fast days of Esther. So he doesn't come to an explicit conclusion.
Making the distinction would suggest that there wasn't a fast day, not that there was a different type of a fast day.
Right, so he's saying, he's conceding here that there must have been some kind of a fast. That's what he calls Tanios Shel Esther. So, he's just not sure. He likes the idea that, the way that you read the pasuk, that it seems like it's a reference to previous fast. He's just bothered by the word of za'akatam, because it sounds like the tanis shel za'aka. Yes?
Is that referring to the Ran's opinion, to those 3 days that Esther fasted?
Yeah, so that would be, that's why he calls them tanios.
Right.
Yeah, multiple fast days.
Really curious again, and apologize if you mentioned this.
No, please.
Where would you put the fast of the firstborn?
Yeah, so the fast of the firstborn is a major question in general, because we're not really allowed to fast during the month of Nisan. But be that as it may, the reason it's never included in discussions of fast days is because the only fast days which we discuss, you know, are the fast days which are on the Jewish people and not on a sub-segment. So it's a different category in its own right. So that's something that's very important. The first part of this year, I just wanted to make that point very clearly, that any way you look at it, the fast days associated with Purim are going to be very different. Number one, they don't have to do with the Churban. The other four fasts have to do with the Churban. This does not have to do with the Churban. But even more importantly is that it's a different quality. It's not just a different subject matter, but it's completely different. We're not mourning, right? That's what the Ran is saying. It's not le'evel, but it's a fast day of tefillah and za'aka, of remembering the uncertainty of the Jewish people hanging in the balance, and therefore the necessity of tefillah. Okay. Now, what I want to introduce in the second part of this year is the school which believes that the fast that we have every year now on the 13th of Adar, or when it falls out or conflicts with Shabbos a few days earlier, is actually based on the fast days that Esther herself went through and instructed the Jewish people to undergo. We're not going to look at it inside, but I just want to make the point that it's not only the Gemara and the Medrash which assumes that the fast days of Esther took place over Pesach, but it's actually the Pshat reading of the Pesukim. Haman drew lots, it says, on the 13th day of the month of Nisan. The next section of the Megillah says Mordechai heard about this and immediately went to the palace, and it was unusual because he was wearing clothes of mourning, and Esther made him change. And he refused because he told her what happened. And then Esther says, fast for 3 days, and then I will go to the king. On the third day, Esther went to the king. So if you
who fasted, just Mordechai or all the Jews?
So we're going to discuss that. The Megillah indicates that all the Jewish people fasted. We're going to read that pasuk in due time. So Stanley raised this as a possibility before. Perhaps the fast of Esther, as we know it today, is a memorial tribute to the fast that was undertaken. And the only problem that we have to deal with then is the problem of Nisan versus Adar. And there are two ways of getting out of that. The one way is conceptually what Nathan said, is that, okay, but they wanted to show that this happened before the salvation of Purim. Remember, in the time of Esther, the fast days happened before the salvation. So you had to keep the fast day before the salvation. Why is that really important? It fits in beautifully with the construct that we're starting to develop, that it has to be a fast of uncertainty. It would be completely inappropriate to mark the fast day after the salvation, because you'd lose the whole theme of a fast day of uncertainty. So it had to be preempted. Another way to get out of it is a more technical approach, which we'll see. I'm partial to Nathan's way of reading it. But just I want to establish a few sources which are good to be aware of. You take a look at source 5. Source 4 are just the psukim. That's what we went through outside. Vayavor Mordechai Amarav. Rav said, Shehev yer yom rishon shel Pesach betainis. That the first day of the 15th day of the month of Nisan, Mordechai fasted that year. Okay. Take a look at source 6. It's a mind-blowing source.
Great.
Yes.
How do you fast on the first day of Pesach when he's obliged to eat on Pesach?
Shira, do you want to say?
No.
Oh, okay. Anybody want to say? Anybody remember the Medrash Rabbah that we mentioned? Nathan, does somebody want to bring Nathan up? This is Baruch Shekivant. You asked a question, the Medrash Rabbah. But what did Esther say? Mordechai objected. Mordechai said, I don't want to fast. It's Pesach. And what did Esther say? Right. This is not a usual circumstance. So since we're going to get killed, we have to have a fast. That's what the Gemara is playing off of. Why the word literally says Vayavor Mordechai, and Mordechai crossed over. So one opinion in the Gemara is that he crossed over a river. The archaeology of ancient Shushan is that there is actually a river in the middle of the city. The other opinion in the Gemara is Vayavor Mordechai. He violated. Right, that he violated. He did what he, like an Aveira, that which he wasn't supposed to do, but obviously justified in light of the circumstances. What would have otherwise been an Aveira? Shehevir yom mishon shel Pesach betainis. He passed over with the tainis. But remember, we assumed that the fast is an Adar, but watch this. This is not a well-known source, but it will change the way you look at. There are some people who are so committed to the idea that the fast of Esther that we have today is really the fast of Esther, the fast that they went through historically. It's source 6. Minag Rabosenu Shebemarav, the Western rabbis. Who are the Western rabbis?
Israel.
Right, it's not the rabbis from California. It's the rabbis of, though they're great too, it's the rabbis of Israel. We always call them the Western rabbis because relative to Babel, they're in the West. So Minag Rabosenu Shebemarav, Lis Anos Shloshes Yemeit Tzom, Mordechai VeEsther, Prudos. They would fast 3 separate days from Mordechai and Esther. Why 3 days?
Because they all fasted 3 days.
Exactly. So they really felt that the Tanis, what we call Tanis Esther, it really has to be Tanis Esther. Thanks a lot, Nathan. So it really has to be Tanis Esther. Ula Achar Purim, Sheni V'Chamishi V'Sheni, and they did it after the 13th and the 14th and the 15th of Adar. And they wanted to do it in Chodesh Nisan, but they couldn't do it. V'lama emis ani nosan b'Chodesh Nisan. If you really want it to be based on the fast that Esther herself underwent, if that's what you want, so then you should have done it in Nisan. V'lama ein nisani nosan b'chodesh nisan, mipnei she'be'echad v'nisan hukam b'mishkan. Because the month of Nisan was prohibited from all fasts because of the fact that the Mishkan was built, and then later on there was the holiday of Pesach. But if they had their druthers, they would have fasted 3 days, and they would have done it in the month of Nisan, because what's all this based on anyway? The fast that Mordechai and Esther themselves underwent. So this is a school in the Rishonim. We'll see.
But you're not allowed to fast on consecutive days.
Yeah, so what they would do is that's what they would do, prudos. Prudos means separated. They would do, as you see here, Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni, Monday, Thursday, Monday. So after Purim, right? Okay, this is going to be one of those things we're going to be happy. Nobody does this, right, here? Anybody do this? Okay, so one of the things, this would be something we're happy that didn't, this is, right, Bahab is a general concept, so this is a version of Bahab. Bahab just means Monday, Thursday. Okay, so only in the steeples. We can be glad for that. That tickles Gladys.
So they would fast for 3 days?
They would fast
in Adar.
They would fast for 3 days in Adar. Now they wanted to do it in Nisan, they just couldn't do it in Nisan because Nisan you couldn't fast. But why did they want to do 3 days, and why did they want to do it in Nisan? Because the whole thing is based on what Mordechai, Esther, and the Jewish people did at that time. So it doesn't make any sense to have a fast on the 13th day of Adar, because nobody was fasting on the 13th day of Adar. So that's why these Israeli rabbis wanted to do it then. The only reason they were fasting in Adar was for technical reasons. So this is a really amazing idea. Now the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, wrote about this. It says, Umishum tekashule, there's a problem, there's a kashra, a difficulty. Im kein sh'anu mis'anin tanis zeh, zecher l'tanis Mordechai v'Esther. If we're really commemorating what Mordechai and Esther went through when they fasted, we just have a simple question. Lama ein anu mis'anin hashlosha taniyos she'is'anu heim b'nisan. Why don't we fast for 3 days as they did in the month of Nisan? It doesn't seem to make any sense. L'kach chasav raboseinu shebemarav, that's why we have this tradition from Masechta Sofrim, which read in source 6. Hayu mis'anin osam, they actually did it. They did the real thing. And we explained, the only reason they didn't do it in Nisan is just for technical reasons. So the Beis Yosef says, V'anu, in the 15th and 16th century, shelo naginan kein, why don't we do this? Nira shehatam, it seems that the reason is, kidei shelo lahachbid ala tzibor. It was too much. This was too hard to sell. If we were really doing it right, we would do what they did. We would fast for 3 days, and if we could really do it in Nisan, we would do it in Nisan. But, after all, can't fast in Nisan, and furthermore, you know, it's too much, people aren't going to go for a 3-day fast, even if we dilute it and we don't make it on consecutive days, well, Monday, Thursday, Monday it up, and nonetheless, we're going to, it's too much to ask. But according to this approach, the fast of Esther is really very much the fast of Mordechai and Esther and the Jewish people of that generation, and the fact that we have it in Adar is for, again, one of two reasons. Either for the technical reason that we can't do it in Nisan, or, as we are trying to suggest, that it's actually much deeper. It's about preserving the theme of a fast of uncertainty. And to have it as a fast of uncertainty, we have to mark it before we mark the celebrations of before we mark the celebrations of Purim. And that's, I think, a very compelling idea, because sometimes if you want to be loyal to a particular event, if you're a strict constructionist about it, you miss the point. Meaning, you could say, if you really want to be loyal to what they went through in that generation, you should do it in Nisan. But that really wouldn't do justice to the broader point, namely that it was a fast of uncertainty. Because remember, in the salvation in that generation, the fast was in Nisan, and then the salvation only came the subsequent Adar. So if you really want to be true to the fast, it makes sense to do it before. That's one whole school within our tradition. We are doing it before, right? But according to these rabbis, we're doing it after.
Not necessarily. They were still doing it 11 months before.
Well, they were doing it in Adar the week after Purim. They wanted to do it in Nisan.
It's
before. It's the year before. But right, it kind of loses its impact. Okay, but in a sense, you know, you could always say but what Nathan's really pointing to is that great circle of time, right? If somebody ever accuses you of being 7 minutes late, you just say, what are you talking about? I'm 23 hours and 53 minutes on the early side. I'm just incredibly early. So that's one way of looking at life. There's a completely different approach, which is a really neat approach. And Stanley also mentioned this. Stanley said, well, maybe the 13th of Adar is completely different. Forget about the fast that Mordechai and Esther underwent. That's not really why we have a Tanis Esther at all. And it's not really Tanis Esther. That's a misnomer. It's a Tanis that the Jewish people undertook as a community on their day of war. And Stanley was very honest about it. He admitted that there was one difficulty with this, one small nagging difficulty, namely, it never says that they fasted, which is a nagging difficulty. But Stanley, you're in good company. You're in like excellent company. You're in Rabbeinu Tam type of company. I'll show you how this develops. So the Gemara in source 9, in source 8, that's just where the Megillah says there was a war. The 13th day is the Jewish people in 127 countries went to war. Source 9, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Shlosha Asar, the 13th day of the month of Adar, Zman Kihila Lakoli. It is a time of gathering. So what does that mean? It's a time of gathering. So Rashi says, oh, what that means is that in the Megillah on the 13th day, they gathered and they went to war. But Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, right, his grandson, Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Meir, who is called Tam, Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshevo Halim. So Rabbeinu Tam, as he often does, disagrees reverentially and respectfully with his grandfather, and he explains as follows. What does the Gemara mean when it says Shlosha Asar Zman Kihila Lakolhi? The 13th day is a time of gathering. That's a very particular phrase. Zman Kihila. We're going to come back to that. It's really, really important phraseology. So, Pirish Rabbeinu Tam, Zman Kihila Lakolhi. What does that mean? Shehakol Misasfin Latanis Esther. Everybody gathers in for the fast day. Ubaim Bnei HaKfarim. It's a beautiful idea. The villagers, the people from the towns, we would say the suburbanites, right? Those Jews far out in places like Englewood, Teaneck, White Plains. Forget about the Jews from out of town. You know, they just have to hook up via satellite. Bayim b'nei hakfarim la'ayaros, a beautiful minhag. The villagers used to come to the cities. Lomar slichos v'tachanunim. Fascinating. We don't understand this. I mean, why couldn't they just say Slichos and Tachanunim at home? They would come to the cities to say... So one approach is that they actually couldn't do it. In fact, there's one to recommend this approach because they would have to come in for the Megillah. Very good. And it sounds like because they couldn't meet the Megillah. Though Slichos and Tachanunim, you know, those are a little more flexible. That just requires tefillah that they probably could have done, but you could be right.
Why would they gather on the 13th when the guys from the villages could come from the 11th and the 14th? Why wouldn't they fast one day before they came in on whichever day was market day?
Ah, very good. So that, I think, requires a deeper explanation. Right. So what does Rabbeinu Tam explain? Why were they gathering in specifically on the 13th day? Lefi Shebo, he quotes now the Pasuk in Megillah, Nikalu la'amod al nafsham. He uses that word of Kihila again. It's going to be a crucial word for us. Because on that day, the Jewish people formed a community to defend their lives. V'hayut srichin rachamim. And they needed heavenly compassion and mercy. V'chein matzinu b'moshe. We find the precedent in Moshe Rabbeinu, she'asatanis kishanilcham ba'amalek. The first time the Jewish people had to confront Amalek. Right now, the Purim story is the Jewish people confronting Amalek. We have a Midrashic tradition that Moshe Rabbeinu fasted. Dechsiv Moshe Aaron Bechur Alu Rosh HaGevav V'Darshinam V'Mesechas Tanis Mikan L'Tanis Tzibor Shetzarech Shlosha. If you're going to have a Tanis Tzibor, you need three people. But who said anything about a Tanis? They went up to the mountain. For all, you know, all we know is that Moshe's arms went up on the mountain. But according to the tradition of Chazal, there was a Tanis. Why? Because when the Jewish people go to war, especially a war against Amalek, they need rachamim from Hashem, there has to be a tanis. Mikan nira l'Rabbeinu Tam, so Rabbeinu Tam, beautifully, what a wild idea. But what he's doing is he's developing this idea, mikan nira l'Rabbeinu Tam, sa'ad l'tanis Esther, sha'anu osin kimo sha'asu b'mei Mordechai v'Esther, kishanikalu ha'yehudim l'amod al nafsham. Maybe what we do when we fast on the 13th of the month of Adar has nothing to do with the fast 11th month before in Nisan, but it has to do with the fast that Rabbeinu Tam is speculating took place on the day the Jewish people went to war. The Megillah doesn't say they fasted, because it's understood. Whenever you go to war, at least whenever you go to war with Amalek, there's a fast. And how do we know? Because Moshe and Aaron and Hur, when the Jewish people were fighting Amalek in the desert, they fasted. So a fast always accompanies a war.
Modern days, mm-hmm. armies eat so they can fight well. And in those days, if they were sensitive to the fact that Hashem was waging war for them, they could fast because they weren't going to be relying on their own strength.
Correct. That's what he's saying, the Hayu Tzrich and Rachamim. That they needed more than anything else. They didn't need, they didn't need their Wheaties. They needed their, compassion. That doesn't sell a lot of boxes of cereal, but it is a religious value. Then Rabbeinu Tam says something really important. He says, "V'lo matzinu lo smach b'shum makom ela b'chan." And if this isn't the basis for the fast that we have today in the 13th month of Adar, then there is no basis. He rejects all the other bases. He says that pasuk at the end of Perek Test, "Divrei Atzamot v'zakatam," that can't be talking about Atanas. And he doesn't buy the idea that the 3-day fast in Nisan became a 1-day fast in Adar. That doesn't seem to make sense to him. So Rabbeinu Tam here has taken a completely different approach. What is our fast that we're going to have tomorrow based on? The fast of the 13th of Adar? It's based on the original fast of the 13th day of the month of Adar, a fast which doesn't appear in the Psukim, which Rabbeinu Tam is speculating somewhat wildly about, but he thinks that they fasted. And he says, we fast on the 13th of Adar because they fasted on the 13th of Adar. They were preparing for war. So it really does seem like a completely different approach. Again, the first approach is to say that it was a 3-day fast in the month of Nisan, but either because you can't fast in the month of Nisan, or for more conceptual reasons, that you want to preserve the quality of the fast of uncertainty, you bump it up to before the actual, we celebrate the actual liberation, the holiday of Purim. Those would be two very different approaches. One is the approach that we saw in Masechah Sofrim, that it was a 3-day fast on the basis of what Esther went through, and Beis Yosef speaks about, and he says, why do we only do 1 day? Because we're just not up for it. And that's one school, and then the other school is the approach of Rabbeinu Tam. So
would Rabbeinu Tam not call it the fast of Esther? She called it
the fast of war? Very good. So that's the real question. The one lingering, there are two weaknesses, as I see it, with Rabbeinu Tam's argument. Yehuda, do you want to make a comment? There are two weaknesses. The first weakness we spoke about, namely, the fact that there is no fast in the Psukim. He's simply assuming that there was a fast, and he argues it on the basis of a medrash about Moshe. Nathan is pointing out a second difficulty. Well, why do we call it Tanis Esther? Because, after all, it has nothing to do with the fast that Esther actually went through. But we know that he does call it Tanis Esther, because he says here in the first line, "Shakol mis asvin l'tanis Esther." So he can't argue with the fact that it's called Tanis Esther. And what he'll have to explain is, we call it Esther because it was in the general time of Esther. The fast. Yeah, exactly. So you can get out of that problem. But clearly, the people who argue the other perspective, that it's really based on the fast that Esther herself called for, that she initiated, like the idea that it was her fast. The Mishnah Brura, written by the Chafetz Chaim, which is a little funny. The Chafetz Chaim was a book written by Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan of Radin. So the Chafetz Chaim asks Nathan's question. It says, according to Rabbeinu Tam, why are you going to call it Tanis Esther? Call it whatever you like. Call it the fast of the 13th of Adar. Call it the war fast. And he gives an answer there. He says what he says. He says it has something to do with individuals, but it's a good question. But Rabbeinu Tam agreed to the idea that it's Tanis Esther. So these seem like two completely competing notions of where the fast day comes from. And in a sense, historically, they are. But what I want to try to argue in the last 5 minutes is really they share much more they share so much more than that which separates them. Because if you really think about it, what they both share is that they both represent a completely new paradigm of fasting. Again, it's not what the Ron called fast days of Avil, But according to both views, there are fasts of uncertainty. Fasting not as a, not a result of something tragic happening, but fasting as a way of a real tefillah of sorts, of responding to uncertainty and attempting to come closer to God. Both if you say that the basis was what Esther initiated when she had to approach Ahasuerus, or you say the basis was the war. They're really two sides of the same coin. When the Jewish people are threatened with destruction, right, one of the ways that we respond is through the medium of tefillah, of za'aka, divrei hatzamos v'za'aka sam, but also through the mode of tanis as well. And so in a sense, I think that either approach you take really shares this very important common denominator, namely Tanis Esther is a new kind of Tanis, a Tanis as a day of you know, trying to address our uncertainty, you know, the balance that we hang in through the medium of fasting. And I want to just take that connection one step further. What seems particularly poignant to me is that the two different possibilities for fasting, either the fast that Esther called for or the fast of war, have a very unique phraseology in the psukim. Nathan asked previously, well, who fasted when Esther approached Ahasuerus? Did only she fast? Or did only she and Mordechai fast? Or who was it? So if you look at the pasuk, it says, Lech kinos et kol hayudim hanimtzaim b'shushan. It was the entire Jewish community of Shushan. Vitzumu alai, and fast for me, ve'al tochlu ve'al tishtu shloshet yamim laila v'yom. So on and so forth. But this important phrase of Lech kinos et kol hayudim, form a kenisa, form a kehila, form a community, and then fast. This collectivizing aspect to the day of the type of fast that Esther called for. So if you hold that that was the basis, you have this notion of the community coming together. And even if you hold that the other source was the basis, namely the day the Jewish people went to war, we already spoke about that. Right? What does the pasuk say? Nikalu ha-Yehudim ba'arihem. The Jewish people came together. Nikalu, that's the language of Kehila. Rabbeinu Tam spoke about it, he quoted from a pasuk later in Perek Tes. Nikalu la'amod al nafsham. They formed a community. In other words, when you're talking about a fast that reflects uncertainty, a fast that speaks to the Jewish people hanging in the balance and needing rachamei shamayim, what's an absolute necessity is coming together as a people. Hashem has mercy on us as a Jewish community. Hashem remembers his covenant with the community of Israel. So either way, whether you say the precedent was the fast that Esther herself went through, those 3 days, or you say the precedent was what the Jewish people went through on the day of the war, what the common feature is that they're both uncertainty, and therefore, as a response to that uncertainty, we come together. It's a fast day of Kenisa, of Lech Kenosis Kol HaYehudim, and then it's also a fast day of Nikalu HaYehudim Ba'arehem, the forming of the Kehila, the forming of the community, as Rabbeinu Tam says, Nikalu La'amod Al Nafsham. That's a crucial, crucial word. And the Gemara reflects this. Remember, we stressed it before in the Gemara. What the Gemara said is, Amar of Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, the 13th day, the day when we fast, how do we describe that day? Zman kihila lakolhi. What does the Gemara mean when it says it's a zman kihila? It's exactly this point. It's a zman kihila. It's a day of coming together. And I think that's the real reason that, as Rabbeinu Tam described it, shehakol misasfin, everybody gathered together the Tanis Esther, ubayim b'nei hakfarim la'ayaros lomar slichos v'tachanunim. That generations later, when they paid homage to this day, it had to be a collective day. Maybe they could have, maybe they couldn't have said it in their own cities, but they had to come together for this. Because it's a collectivizing day. If it's a day in which we're not just mourning something tragic that happened, but that we're speaking about the Jewish people under threat of destruction, what is required? We have to come together. It's not just about fasting, but it's really about coming together and fasting, either Lech Kenosis Kol HaYehudim, or alternatively, if you say that the basis was the day of the fighting, Nikalu HaYehudim Barehem. I wanted to conclude with an amazing amazing tshuva, quoted in the name of Rashi. We know Rashi was obviously, in addition to being a businessman, Rashi wrote Perushim on the Chumash and on the Gemara. People generally have heard of Rashi, prominent Orthodox rabbi. But also, not everybody knows a local Orthodox rabbi. So people used to ask Rashi questions, and he would help them. So I found this very moving, and I think it ties together everything we tried to say in a beautiful way. So the first line here, this is all quoted in the Beis Yosef and Source 13. Matzati b'shem Rashi. Rashi wrote about this. Ma'asa haya v'ira purim be'echad b'shabbos. Right, just like this. Yira purim fell out on a Sunday. V'kidmu hatzibor li'sanos b'chamishi k'minhag. Right, and as is done every year, you fast on Thursday. You can't fast on Friday, because as the poskim explain, Friday is a crazy day. You never can get anything done on Friday. You have to go shopping. Your kids need haircuts. You know, it's just craziness on Friday. You can't have a Friday. You have to fast on Thursday. So what happened? Uba isha achas. So a woman, a Jewish woman, came to Rashi, and she said, Shehaisa tzricha lirkov etzel hashulton. She had to make a trip to the government. She was going on the APEC trip. And she had to lobby for the strong, you know, we would say U.S.-Israel relationship. They used to say Rhineland-Israel relationship. So she had to go, what is, she had to go visit the bishop for whatever reason. Vishala l'Rabbeinu, and so she asked Rashi, Yihi yichol l'hisanos l'machar, can I fast on Friday? V'lechol, right, exactly, let me fast on Friday. After all, the real fast day is Saturday. We're bumping it up. You know, yeah, I can't fast on Shabbos, can't fast on Friday. So Rabbi, can I fast on Friday? I can't fast on Thursday. I have to travel on Thursday. Because, you know, she's going to be traveling. She's going to get lightheaded. She has to, you know, meet the governor, whatever it is. So, all right, let's take a poll before we see Rashi's answer. What do we think? Can we be Megill? You know, they say on the poor woman, you know, poor woman with her chicken. Can you not find the heter for the chicken? Yes.
Poor. Tisha B'Av, we put off the fast for Shabbat.
True. Very true.
So therefore you should be able to put off a fast day rather than accelerating it to Wednesday.
Okay, so Nathan has made a very good argument.
The point is to do it as a whole.
Okay. Shira, very good. Okay, we're going to come back to that. I just want to spend 10 seconds here on what Nathan is saying, because I think it really proves the point. I didn't think we'd have time to get into it, but I'm going to get greedy for a second. There's always a rule. Whenever a fast day conflicts with Shabbos, not Yom Kippur. We can fast on Shabbos because it says about Yom Kippur. It says in the Torah, excellent Tova, Shabbat Shabbaton. Exactly right. So it doesn't conflict with Shabbos. It actually furthers Shabbos. How so? To come back on Yom Kippur. But any other fast day that conflicts with Shabbos, Nathan just quoted a very important rule. Akdume puranisa lo mikadminan. You never move up a fast day. It's usher to move up a fast day. You can never move up a fast day. Akdume puranisa lo mikadminan. Because you don't move up puranis. Puranis means troubles, travails. But what is, the proof is in the pudding. The fact that we can move up Tanis Esther, what does that prove? Because it's not for Puranas. It's a completely different paradigm. It's not a fast day of mourning, of something sad. It's a fast day of uncertainty. That's why we don't have a problem bumping it up. That itself, that halacha is always so elegant. It's like a symphony. So the fact that you can only move up Tanis Esther proves it's so different. I think that's the best raya for the idea that we're trying to develop, that it's a fast of uncertainty. And then we have the Ran who says it explicitly, but it all works together.
I want to vote with Shira because you lose the community aspect if you go on a different day, so I'm going to vote with her.
I think Shira has a beautiful idea. And even before, so Shira, you're in really good company. If Stanley was in Rabbeinu Tam company before, watch how Shira is in Rashi company. But it gets even better. Okay, so Amar Rabbeinu. This is like the best answer in the world because it's a complete 180. Watch what happens. Amar Rabbeinu, Rashi says, Tanisah! Eino lo mi divrei Torah. It's not from the Torah that we know. Velo mi divrei sofrim. And it's not even really rabbinic. It's less than that. Elam minhag ba'alma. It's a light little minhag. It's really that. And if you'll tell me, but didn't Mordechai and Esther themselves fast? Come on, says Rashi. Sharei, Tanis Esther, Mordechai, hayu bimei Pesach. They fasted in Nisan. So this isn't their fast. Their fast was in Nisan once upon a time. Right? And if you'll tell me that, you know, after all, the Pasuk in Perek Tet says, V'im nafshecha lomar dibrei hatzomos v'za'ak asam, and if you'll tell me, but doesn't the Pasuk itself refer to it, so, don't you know, it's not just the minhag, it already comes from the Megillah, it's more serious. Ein zeh perusho, it's nothing. That's not what those psukim mean. Ella, right, kach pirish al dvar hatzomos v'atza'akosh avro lehem, that pasuk is not talking about the fast that they accepted the doros. So he said, kind woman, don't worry, it's not Doraisa, it's not even Durabanan, it's not based on what Mordechai and Esther did, that was in Nisan, and if you'll tell me it's an explicit Pasuk, that's not what the Pasuk refers to. So you think the next line is, so sure, you want to make up your, you want to fast, you want to make it up on Fridays, Zagazunt. You want to make it up the next Friday, Zagazunt. You want to give a donation to the shul, that's even better. Rashi says, V'afal pichein. And even though everything I said is true, Asur lo la'adam lifrosh mina tzibor mishum lo tizgotu. You can't separate yourself from tzibor. This holiday is all about the tzibor. This holiday is all about leich kenosis kol ha'yehudim, nikalu ha'yehudim ba'areihem. What we're really trying to do on Tanis Esther is form a collective. Because if in fact it is correct, I mean, it's our argument that Tanis Esther is about the uncertainty. It's not about mourning like every other fast day, the killing of Gedalia, or the destruction of the temple, or the breaching of the walls of the city, or all the things that we mourn on our fast days. But it's about the Jewish people were hanging in the balance, and we have to come together as a community and ask for rachamim. Then we need everybody represented, right? Asur lo la'adam lefrosh min hatzibur. And it should just be noted that that this language, the language which was uttered by Rashi so many centuries ago, Rashi lived 1040 to 1105, so 1,000 years ago, the Rama, Rav Moshe Isser, was an ancestor of Nathan's, the Rama codified this lahalacha. The Rama said, because of this, we have a very important concept of tzibur on Tanis Esther, and that even though halachically speaking it's the lightest of the fast days, so if somebody has a medical reason, we're very, very lenient. Generally speaking, there's a great impulse for the tzibur to come together. So just to summarize what we saw, wrap it all up, we